You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For most of the 9 years, B.J. Novak worked as a writer, actor, director, and producer for the Emmy Award-winning comedy series The Office. He carried a notebook and jotted down ideas for stories and jokes as they occurred to him. After the show's final episode aired in May, he looked over those notebooks and realized that he had the beginnings of a short story collection, and the stories, which range in length from 2 sentences to 12 pages, are collected in Mr. Novak's first book called One More Thing. It's published by Knopf. I'm very pleased it has brought him to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Had you always made it a practice to write down your ideas?
Yeah. I went in and out of being diligent about it, but I always have written them down, whether it's on a phone app or a notebook. And I became more obsessive about it as I felt a lot of ideas coming to me that I just could not fit into the world of The Office, which is a beautiful world to work in as a writer. But it of course, is by definition very limited.
Well, although I'm sure many of the things that occurred to you did wind up becoming
many of them did, you know,
parts of segments on the show.
Of course. And, you know, I would often look at these notebooks and think, well, that's romantic. Maybe Jim could suggest that to Pam, or, oh, that's a crazy idea. Maybe could Michael say that, or was that a Creed? Is it so crazy it's a Creed idea? And then every now and then things just, I loved the idea, but it just wasn't right for any character or for something that could take place in a paper company.
When you returned to those notes, did you find most of them funny, or did they at least contain something that you felt you could be able to turn into a funny story?
Everything started with an idea that made me, if not laugh, made me think, well, that's a clever thought. That there's something in that. But as I wrote the stories, they would, to be true to each idea, I would sometimes take them in directions I hadn't anticipated.
So some of them are a little poignant.
Yeah, some of them would go in directions that were less directly funny, more, you know, more true to whatever the original thought was.
Because you're an actor, is that a reason that you tell them in so many different voices?
I think I definitely enjoy that aspect, especially. I love getting in the head of even the most minor. I'm often playing a very minor character in a film, but I create a real world and language in my head for who this person is, why they're in that one scene. And so for every character that has dialogue in any of these stories, I really enjoyed giving them a full inner life.
And as I mentioned, many of the stories are laugh out loud funny, like the something by John Grisham, but also others can be poignant, like a good problem to have.
Yeah. Well, thank you, first of all. A good problem to have is an idea. I was reading an interview in which someone complained about copyright law. Would you expect a textbook author to want royalties for a famous math problem? And I thought, well, what if one did? And I thought of this man who invented the famous train problem. If the train is leaving Chicago at 85 miles an hour, et cetera.
And I never get that right.
I never get it right either at all.
I always thought they were in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. As comes up in the story, the teacher said, well, I changed the cities. Does that matter? But I wanted to know, what's the emotional life? Why did he write this? What inspired him? Why does he want credit? Would he be satisfied with the legacy he left? So it, as I naturally considered where this funny story went, to be true to the characters, I would sometimes go in more sensitive directions. But they always started from something funny.
You began your comedy career doing stand-up. So were you going back to your roots when you decided to read early drafts of some of these stories to audiences at LA's Upright Citizens Brigade Theater?
Yeah, 100%. That was the most, that was the hardest work I've ever done, is reading, not reading in stand-up, but performing the things I had written in front of a brutally honest group of strangers.
And did that lead to changes in these stories?
Yeah, I went up with a pen every time. You know, I went up there the first time thinking I'm, you know, David Sedaris, and it's just going to be, you know, laughter and adulation. And no, that pen worked pretty hard in those first few performances, because when you write on your own, it's easy to tell yourself, well, that's brilliant for this reason, that reason. When you're in front of someone, they cannot fake interest. And I hated that feeling. I wanted to work harder, so that's why I took it there.
Well, when I read a David Sedaris story, I hear his voice
yeah.
telling me the story. You didn't have that advantage.
Right. He's speaking of his own life, and he's very well known. As that, I was well known enough that if I booked a theater, people would come. They expect, oh, maybe it will be like his stand-up comedy or like the stuff I've seen on The Office. So it allowed me this great advantage of having an audience. And then once I had the audience, I really took very seriously the idea of making that worthwhile for them.
In fact, you've said that knowing you were going to read your stories to a live audience put pressure on you.
Tremendous.
To make them as good as you could. But it also probably put some pressure on you to finish stories that you might not been finding a way to finish.
Well, writing is extremely solitary, of course. And I had been in this writer's room and on sets, and I had been in a very collaborative environment. So while it was very fun and refreshing to be alone, like a sort of, you know, brilliant recluse on a hill, to live out that romantic idea, I also did want something to keep me on track. So, you know, if I had a show on Thursday of my stories, that was a deadline. It was, I wanted to make them good, and I wanted to have new stuff ready.
Did you read any of the poignant stories or only the funny ones?
No, I read almost all of them. And it was interesting, an adjustment to see when people were on the edge of their seats, as they say, for a story that I wouldn't ever have had the courage to tell in stand-up comedy form.
My guest is B.J. Novak, and his collection of short stories, One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories, is published by Knopp. I thought I'd ask you to read, see just how close you come to David Sedaris, one of the shorter ones.
Sure. Assume,
although I'm not sure we have to do one of the two line stories.
Okay.
And you should explain how you came to consider two lines a short story.
Well, I, like many people, live largely on my phone. I love that. As someone who's much better at writing than he is at talking or personal interactions, I love, frankly, that we have a culture where the most casual messages can be in text form. You can obsess over what to write back to someone all day, even if it's just what's up. Mm-hmm. Question mark? No question mark? To me, that's written language, and it's a great thing for any writer. So I wanted to write some things that could be, I could Instagram that page, you know, I could text this idea. So I thought it was actually a form worthy of respect. Not all the stories are that short, but some of them I wanted to leave that length.
My big concern is the autocorrect, which has sent out some pretty weird messages that I didn't intend to send out.
Yes, where everything is ducking in my iPhone.
Well, words that I would never have used suddenly wind up in messages I send out. So what are you going to read for us?
Well, I was thinking maybe just a portion of it, but the first story is called The Rematch in this book, and might be a good way to begin. This is my imagining of the tortoise and the hare story. What would have happened after? It always bothered me, the tortoise and the hare. I thought, well, that's one race. One race the hare got ahead of himself. In general, a hare would beat a tortoise. I found myself getting angry as a kid about that story, and I thought, as an adult, well, how much angrier would the hare have been that this is the legendary story? So this story is called The Rematch. In the aftermath of an athletic humiliation on an unprecedented scale, a loss to a tortoise in a foot race, so staggering that, his tormentors teased, it would not only live on in the record books, but would transcend sport itself and be taught to children around the world in textbooks and bedtime stories for centuries, that hundreds of years from now, children who had never heard of a tortoise would learn that it was basically a fancy type of turtle from hearing about this very race. The hare retreated, understandably, into a substantial period of depression and self-doubt. The hare gained weight, then lost weight, turned to religion, then another, less specific religion. The hare got into yoga, shut himself indoors on a self-imposed program to read all the world's great novels, then traveled the world, then did some volunteer work. Everything helped a little bit at first, but nothing really helped. After a while, the hare realized what the simplest part of him had known from the beginning. He was going to have to rematch the tortoise. "No," came the word from the tortoise's spokesperson. "The tortoise prefers to focus on the future, not relive the past. The tortoise is focused full-time on inspiring a new generation with the lessons of dedication and persistence through his popular speaking tours and his charitable work with the Slow and Steady Foundation.
B.J. Novak reading the opening paragraphs from the first story in his short story collection called One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. You've produced a really funny trailer for the book featuring you and Mindy Kaling, your good friend and co-star from The Office. It's more like a short film than a traditional book trailer. Were you trying to avoid the typical author interview book trailer format?
I wanted to do something that was funny and let me work with Mindy, who is an author I really admire, actually, in addition to being such a good friend. And I wanted to do some play on what it was like for a celebrity to write a book and try to be taken seriously through that book. It was something that I certainly was a part of, but also wanted to make fun of, which is why I wanted to go with this, you know, French New Wave, you know, black and white in a cafe, the very romantic ideal of writing that, of course, I have fallen for to an extent, but also wanted to not take too seriously.
Well, she's a pretentious French woman who's a great fan of Sartre, and yeah. You play an aspiring author who tries to impress her.
Yeah.
So was that improvised?
No, that was scripted pretty carefully, although because we ended up dubbing it, we were going to dub it with these French actors doing the voices, so we had to get it pretty specific. But the final part of the – it's only 3 minutes long. It's not like this multi-act piece.
But it allowed you to also be a director.
It was a lot of fun to direct that. I've directed some episodes, but I never directed – of TV shows, but never anything that I conceived of. But the final minute was improvised between the two of us, and she really led the way there.
Did you join the office as a writer or an actor?
I joined at the same time as both. That was the great experiment that Greg Daniels wanted to try, to have writer-actors. So he saw me doing stand-up and had the idea that I could maybe try both.
But you'd also been in some recent movies, Inglourious Basterds, Mr. Banks. I guess they came after you started on the show.
Yes, and generally I think some casting director got the idea from me having seen me on The Office. Those definitely all came after.
And I'm assuming you also wrote some of your best lines for yourself when you were writing for the show.
Yeah, there was a line I was proud of. Ryan, my character, is really, there's no more articulate way to say this, really the worst, and keeps finding new ways to be the worst. And he apologizes to Kelly, Mindy Kaling's character, for his past bad behavior, and one of his excuses is, I think I never fully processed 9/11. And I thought, I was proud when I thought of that I could go to such awful depths for an excuse for treating a girlfriend badly.
Many actors and writers have told me that they hope one day to direct. Mm-hmm. And then others talk about how difficult it is to direct themselves because you're on both sides of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether George Clooney, I haven't seen his new film, but I assume that the reason that Matt Damon is in front of him in all of the posters means that he's decided to make Matt Damon the star.
I would never dare to go into that psychological.
Well, but what do you prefer most, or are they all equal to you, acting, writing, directing?
Writing is what everything comes from for me. In my early days as an actor, every time I was cast in anything, it was always, you're a writer who, you know, I think I just betray this literary thing that I can't escape, which is fine now that I am much happier being mainly a writer and less trying to figure out who I am. But I'm definitely a writer, and everything else comes from my desire to express what I've written.
And you're committed to writing. This is part of a 2-book deal with Knopf.
Yeah.
So are you hard at work at the other book?
I have so many stories that I started for this book that I never got ready in time for those shows, often more ambitious or long or things I needed more confidence to complete. So I'm excited to do that next.
Imagine ever doing a novel?
Like I told you, my big fear is boring the reader, boring the audience. So I would never set out to fill a novel. If there was something I really thought was just on a roll and I wanted to do more and more with it, I could see writing a novel that way. But I would never try to join that club unless I really thought I had a good case to join.
B.J. Novak's book, his first book, is One More Thing, Stories and Other Stories. It's published by Knopf. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having me on.